Yes. Another time. It's the same darn place. We didn't, I was going to say another time, another place, but it's actually exactly the same place. I don't think I've moved 3 inches. So, anyway, Fish and Frank here. Captain Rhett Morris on the other chair up opposite me today. So, looks like everything's going to, it's going to be a good show. We're going to talk about fishing and related stuff. Isn't that a shock?
Rock and roll.
Yeah. Oh, it would be a shock. If we actually made it through a show and only talked about fishing, that would just scare the heck out of me. I mean, David here, the guy, we get rattle traps and stuff from, he was in talking, and he says, are we doing a geography lesson or are we talking about fishing?
That's right. Yeah. Sometimes a little bit of both.
Yeah. So anyway, let's get rid of, that Frank here, go away. All right, and Captain Rhett Morris in the studio today, so everybody, yes, the crowd gets all excited. Welcome back, Rhett.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, one more time. Yay! All right, anyway, we have such a our crowd, our studio audience is so well, little flick of the hand, and they come up, and they go away.
They're very good, well-trained.
Yeah, very well-trained audience, yes. You throw them a couple of dog biscuits every once in a while. They're great people. So, anyway, what you been up to?
We've been chasing the tarpon like crazy, man. Having a bit of a rough start to the season, though, because we had a lot of wind.
It's been a weird year. Bait-wise, it's been weird. Tarpon-wise, it's been weird. Hearing a lot of different fish showing up, though. I mean, from small bait fish to tarpon, we're starting to see a kind of an influx. What's your grasp on it?
Well, I'm definitely not seeing the white bait or scaled sardines in the number that we should see this time of year in size. There's seems to be a large amount of very small white bait showing up, which is really odd because that typically doesn't show up till mid to late summer, around June, July. So that's a little odd. No one can really figure that one out. In fact, for that matter, nobody can figure out why the bait didn't come in on time this year. It's the first time I think it's ever happened in history.
Well, it's been getting less and less every year.
Yeah.
You've been doing charters, 20-some years now?
Yeah.
And you remember, 20-some years ago, half the harbor would be thread fins.
Yep.
And the greenbacks would go from Alligator Creek all the way down to Pirate Harbor. They were just everywhere.
Yep.
And as well as I do, we've been casting that amount of existence.
Yeah, we have.
There's no other way to say it. We're just killing too many. And I've been organizing. You can help me in my effort. My goal right now is to get people to say, we killed that school, not they moved.
Right. I agree with that.
Once we start saying things like that, we start recognizing what we're doing. And there's no problem catching and using greenbacks for bait because they only live a year and a half to 2 years. That's their whole life cycle. They don't really get much more than 2 years old before they die. Here's the problem. I've been doing a lot of research, and 4 to 6 months it takes them to get to breeding size.
Wow.
So 4 to 6 months to reach breeding size means we should not cast that May, June, July, August, possibly September.
Yeah, let them go through their spawn.
We got to start letting them get spawning season. So we would either have to pick March, April, May, June, July, or let's see, August, July. I can't even go backwards today. I'm a mess. I'm just banging my head on the microphone.
I'm glad you didn't ask me
God.
That.
We need literally 5 months a year with no cast netting in the harbor if we're going to keep a sustainable amount of bait.
Yeah, I think the issues like that really are taboo in a lot of people's minds, and you don't want to, and no one wants to speak of it. But as we move forward in time, we need to really start paying a lot of attention to things just like this.
The same thing, people get all excited about the tarpon, the redfish, the snook, all these other fish. But everyone has forgotten our little bait, fish. And
the beginning of the food chain.
That's where it all starts. It all starts and stops with food. No food, no fish.
That's right.
And so we're going to have to start taking big looks at it. And I know we've been talking about it a lot on the radio, and you guys are bored with it. But it's part of my goal, my mission, to change one simple phrase. I do not want people saying anymore, they moved. They moved into our damn live wells, and we killed them.
That's right.
And once we say that, then we begin to understand what we're doing and how we're doing it and what's going on in the world. And all of a sudden, things will change. People will not take 200 pieces when they can take 50.
That's right.
all we have to do is recognize the fact that we are killing them, we are wiping them out, and you, me, all of us, once we recognize we're causing a problem, we will work everything we do to fix that. And that I'm positive of.
Absolutely.
I don't even think we need to, at this point, I don't even think it's like it needs a law or anything. I think we're all just going to have to look and say, okay, what do we need, not what we want.
You're exactly right, Frank. And, you know, this year it's funny you say that because bait was so hard to catch this season, I started to really pay a lot of attention to how much bait I actually did need, not want, but need to get through the day. And many days I'd go back to the dock really stressed out because my live well wasn't blacked out with shiners. That's our big thing here. We say, oh, I'm blacked out. My live well's blacked out. And that right there is a big problem because when you black out a 40-gallon live well, you cannot use that much bait in one 8 to 12-hour day because I've done it for years and it is impossible. Now, if you chum a lot, it's the luxury of chumming that we're all addicted to.
But we got to pick how much we chum.
Exactly. And I stopped chumming this year, and I'm here to tell all you and all the listeners that I saw a very minuscule difference in my results catching fish, whether I was heavily chumming or not chumming this season. Because I'd say starting in the middle of March when I had just literally thrown my shoulder out.
Right.
I couldn't throw the net, 500 times each morning like we were doing. At least it felt like that. And so I started using a lot less bait because I couldn't physically catch enough bait to keep things going. And when I did that and stopped worrying about having enough to chum and just have enough to fish, I realized that I was not dropping in the catch that I was experiencing each day. I was still catching fish. People were still happy. I had a lot less birds to deal with because I wasn't chumming and throwing bait everywhere, and the birds weren't bothering me. So that was a big positive. And then at the end of the day, my footprint in the bay was a lot less because I had used 150 baits to fish 12 hours, whereas I would carry 1,000 or more before and dump out hundreds of dead bait at the end of the day.
We figured it up. If 50 boats a day caught 100 pieces of bait, that's over 1 million pieces of bait a year.
Think about that.
Over 1 million.
Yep.
And that's just 50 boats, and there's way more than that. And taking way more than that. I think the actual figures, if you would figure it up every day of the year here and average it out, I would say there's probably 5-10,000 pieces of bait caught every day of the year here.
Yeah.
And think about the sustainability of that.
That's right.
And so the good thing is, I'm talking to you about it. You're going to talk to another guy. Another guy's going to talk. And we're all going to get together. And I've seen this happen here before. All of a sudden, the cool thing is, how much do I need? Not how much do I want.
Right. And how much can I hold?
What can I get away with?
And yeah, that's what it's always been. Look what I've got. I've got 10,000 baits in the boat that today. Check this out. And that's not where it's at anymore.
No. And I think that this will happen. And I don't think it needs to be like a law. But I think we'll take care of this. But it's going to happen with each one of us talking about each other.
That's right.
But speaking of the bait, I know we got to get to fishing because we've been yakking about this. But getting to the fishing part about it, what have you been catching lately? What's been going on?
We've been chasing tarpon primarily. This is our tarpon season now. Once we hit the 1st of May, I really don't do anything specifically other than chase tarpon. We'll hit some stuff in between here and there. And the tarpon action was really knocked down last week because of the high winds. We had southwest winds at 15 to 25 miles an hour day in, day out.
Have the ones sitting right off the barb and making you as crazy as everybody else?
Oh, yeah. I can't get them to bite at all.
I mean, there's like 1,000 tarpon all laid up outside that bar, and no one can figure out.
Yeah.
I was talking earlier, I am making so much money off those tarpon.
Oh, yeah.
Well, everybody's trying to a new lure, a new rig, a new whatever. Everybody's trying everything. I've got tons of spoons and lots more trolling stuff coming because somebody's going to find something that works.
Yep.
And once it goes, it's going to go big because there's a lot of fish outside that bar.
Yeah, I've tried those and they frustrated me. So I've been sticking with the beaches. I've been sticking with the lower sound, upper harbor and the deep holes. Although those fish are another group of fish that are very, very tricky. And I did spend 10 hours on them yesterday and only got 2 bites.
That's
got a lot
tough.
Of sharks and cobia, though. Thank God the sharks and cobia were going up there nicely. Got a lot of small black tips and some big cobia.
And I got to tell you, you know, I know everybody wants to come here and do the tarpon, but light tackle a couple of those little sharks one time, and your head will spin.
Oh, we did. We dropped down to 15-pound test with a little bit of wire, and those sharks were a blast.
I mean, literally, I don't know of anything more fun, and it's not hurt you fun like a tarpon.
Right.
Tarpon, you will remember mentally and physically for a while. But with those little black tips and those sharp nose and stuff, and a lot of them will come skyrocketing out of the water, and watching them do backflips, and sometimes you just get a good scream across the surface. But that's a pulse-pounding fight on a light tackle.
Absolutely. And that's what we're all out there to do. We're out there to bend rods at the end of the day. And I think that, you know, talking about just bending rods and getting back into why we all really fish, not to fill the coolers, but to bend the rods. There's something that you brought up years ago that I didn't initially think was a good idea, but the more I've been thinking about it and talking with other guides and fishermen about it, we all think it's an excellent idea. And it's the proposal of the one snook per vessel or one snook per person, 40-inch minimum, no maximum. Type of thing. And you know,
I
want to
see all of them go through
the
slot limit. I want to see every snook get through that slot limit. I want to see them all breed. I don't like the fact we're killing the best breeders.
That's exactly right.
And more, and it's because I like reading the science behind stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they are finding out the older a human male is, the more genetic defects they pass to their
kids.
Correct. I mean, I'm too old. I should not be making babies. I am going to pass on genetic defects to my kids that I would not have done or did not do when I had kids in my 20s or 30s.
Correct.
And
it's the same thing with any other biological organism.
They're finding it right across the board.
Yep.
And it doesn't sound like much, and it's small defects, but that's how evolution works.
Exactly.
And we need our fish primer and healthier. And I know I take some unusual radical stances, but when I take one, I mean, I do a lot of reading before I do this, and I try and it's
you're
a weird
right,
stance.
Frank. You're totally right, though. When I first heard it, I thought to myself, that doesn't make sense. But then you think about it, and you start to talk about it, and you get to start bouncing the whys and ifs, you know, back and forth with your friends and peers, and that makes perfect sense, because right now, in all of March and April, I watched the smaller schools, you know, a big school of snook, mature snook in our area, I would consider to be, you know, 15 to 25 fish, maybe 30, and those fish being 28 to 35 inches,
right,
36 inches. And I've watched those schools go from a couple of dozen down to half a dozen or less, because everybody's charged up. They went through March and April trying to get their keeper or two a day or whatever it was, because that's the big thing, to go back to the dock and look what I got, guys, and sort of, you know, show off. But really what the guys don't realize what they're doing, they've effectively taken hundreds of trillions of eggs right out of the cycle the month before they spawn.
My point, and thank you for understanding, I wasn't doing it is for making money. Believe me, I look at everything from two aspects, the recreational aspect and the business aspect, because I am in the business of fishing. And the business of fishing means I want the most best fish for my customers.
Correct.
And the way to do that, the way to get the most and the best snook, is to get that size limit up there. And we have a peculiar problem here that's unique to Naples, Port Charlotte, you know, south of Tampa, in that our big snook go to reef fish.
Yeah.
They literally will leave and go out into the Gulf and not hang out back here once they get over 40 inches.
Mm-hmm.
Very few snook will stay in the harbor, and they're the travelers, believe it or not. The big female, once she's 40-some inches, she might decide she's going to go see Tampa.
Mm-hmm.
The little snook, they know, really have about a mile range. They don't, until it comes big enough to spawn and they go to the Barrier Islands, if you find a snook, he's going to be within a half a mile of that one way or the other.
You got it.
And they don't move around much, but the bigger ones do. They go to the Gulf, and snook have a timeline. They have a life cycle, just like every other creature on the planet, and it's 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
And if we let's start taking from the end of the cycle rather than the beginning.
Exactly. I mean, you know, and there's people out there, and don't get me wrong, folks that are listening to this, I understand the plight that you want to, if you're going to pay money to go fish this area and buy a flats boat and all the tackle you need, that you want to be able to kill your snook. However,
but we'll look at it this way.
Yeah.
Would you rather be catching and releasing 39 and a half inch snook all day or
exactly
25 and a half inch?
You know, Frank, that's what I'm trying to say here, because when I was a kid, I caught my first snook in 1984, and it was one of two dozen plus fish all over 10 pounds. It weighed 12 pounds. The guy I caught it with smacked it out of my hand, almost put me in tears as an 8-year-old, because I wanted to take it home.
Right.
And he smacked it into the water and said, "Boy, we don't mess with fish like that. We only keep the ones that are big enough to make it worthwhile the time it takes to cut them up."
Right.
And we took two home that day over 45 inches.
Yep.
And we caught, we literally caught over two dozen. I wasn't counting, but for an hour and a half, we caught snook over 10 pounds as hard as a pair of 8-year-olds. Me and my buddy could reel these in, his son. And it was phenomenal. It was like that for a long time around here. And then now that fishing has become very popular, the people who are putting up the biggest whine about what's going on as far as a proposal like this, they don't honestly really know how good fishing was 20 years ago.
Well, I caught my first snook was about the same time, maybe a year or two before that. It was in my late 20s, and I just was amazed by it. But we used to, you know, if it was 38, that was okay. But no one would bring in a snook under 38.
That's right.
You just didn't want to mess with it. Now, I enjoy catching the 20, 30-inch snook. They're a lot of fun on light tackle, and they're amazingly acrobatic and all that. But I'm 100% for the customers, for our tourists, for our people that come here to fish. And the way to get the most fish, biggest fish, best fish, is to change our opinion of what we do and do like nature does. Nature takes the old and the sick.
Yep.
And we've got it wrong. And that's the only way. FWC has it wrong. The
yes,
scientists
sir.
Are wrong. They're all wrong. And that's nothing to be ashamed of. They tried it. It's wrong.
Correct. That is exactly right. And the thing is, Frank, that I'd like to say is, when you hear this on the radio and you think to yourself, you know, what are these guys doing? I thought they weren't tree huggers or whatever, and they've got this weird attitude. What I'm trying to say, guys and girls, is that this whole ideal is set up to allow a greater success rate to exist in this harbor. People who come here and don't know what to do and where to go don't catch crap, and that's because the fishery is down low right now. If you could time warp yourself back 20 years ago and see what the snook fishery and red fishery was back
then.
Okay,
you can't do the reds because in 19... Okay, we go back into the 80s, early 90s. You could fish here a month and never catch a redfish. The redfish were wiped out here for a while. So you always got to be careful, because there was a time here where there were no redfish.
Well, didn't they put the moratorium in the 70s?
No, that was back. That was why the net ban came in, because there was no redfish left and a bunch of other stuff. There was very, very little fishing here for a while in that period. Prior to that, in the 80s, was a prime time. In 1971, we had the phosphate spill, which killed everything. It rebuilt after that in a few years, was glorious. And then it was right around the early 90s where this area was kind of dead. And
for reds?
For almost everything. And that early period in the 90s, nobody fished here by the bridge. I mean, there was nothing here by 41. There was halfway up the harbor. Back then, we're traveling all the way south. You were fishing Bull Bay, Turtle Bay. You were fishing down by Pirate Harbor and all that.
Yes.
Because there was no fish up here. Alligator Creek had no fish.
Right.
And
yeah, that's where I'm talking about, is down south. And
you guys had still some pretty good fishing down there, but they had wiped everything out up here.
And well, the long and short of it is,
I was just a few years older than you. How old are you now?
38.
Yeah, see, I'm 56. I'm an old fart, but, you know, I was actually there, and I watched my income go up and down by how many fish are here. And if anybody's wondering if I have your best interest at heart or not, it is the way I make money. And so when the more fish you have, the more fish you're catching, the more money I make. And it works good for all of us. And why would I ever propose something where I thought, A, I would lose the fun I have, and B, lose my income?
Correct.
I would never, I mean, they just wouldn't do it. And I know it's not all about money, but money's a big thing in everybody's life.
That's exactly right.
And if I can make the world better and make more money, I'm a happy camper.
Exactly. And just to relate to what I'm talking about as a fishing guide, if this fishery gets to where I would like to see it at one day, I will not be in the type of demand that I am today, and I'm fine with that. Because people are going to be able to catch more fish on their own. They're not going to need to pay a fishing guide the way they do today.
Well, I can tell you the best reason to find a good guide. You find somebody you enjoy talking to, enjoy fishing with, and do all that. But the big thing is, if you're only down here for a little while, by the time you buy the boat, do the maintenance, and every time you come down, it doesn't run. You have to wait for it to get fixed and do all that. It actually works out cheaper to use a hired captain if you're only down here for a little while a year.
Right.
If you live here, yeah, it's having different. Your own boat is a whole different thing. But when you're a semi-snowbird, you know, a month or so a year, or 3 weeks a year, or
you put
something.
The numbers on the you put piece the numbers on the figure it out.
The captain is way cheaper, and the huge part of it is the way less frustration.
Yep. Better quality.
Well, you don't have to worry, is the boat going to run, not going to run? You know, you get on the boat, you use walk off with your fish.
Catch fish and leave, exactly.
So, and I'm excited you're going to be trying our new fishing poles. I hadn't seen you since we got all the rods in. We're not making a big advertising campaign for them yet because you're going to be fishing them and testing the rods for me. Tom Fisher is.
Correct.
We've got, I think your brother's got some. We're going to get some.
Great.
We're out here testing them, doing hardcore testing. The pink rods were great, so we know the pink and the purple. Those rods, I've sold over 100 of them. They're just amazing.
Yeah, I've been using that, the one I have myself that you gave me, and I love that rod. All the ladies love that rod.
So now we're going to be, we're testing the big ones, the gray and whites, and this is, so far, by all accounts, it's, I did okay.
I
mean,
I would say so. It feels good in my hand.
So, anyway, what's going to go on now? I know we're not going to talk about Boca Grande Pass because I know how you are on all that, you know, but what's going to go on with the tarpon this year? I had a glimpse of some radiation-soaked memory back when I first was in business during the 80s that May was the beginning of the tarpon season.
Yeah.
And it would go from May through the middle of July. But some weeks the tarpon wouldn't get here till the first or second week in May. They wouldn't really start to bite.
Right.
And I think because for the last 10 or 12 years, it's been getting earlier, 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 earlier.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we had tarpon January, and last year, by April, we were in full swing.
Yep.
I mean, by the end of March, beginning of April, the tarpon fishing was going nuts. But now, I seem to remember back when I first was in business, we didn't really consider tarpon season going to start until May.
That's right. That's what I was... I mean, to this day, I don't let people book legitimate tarpon trips unless they understand, you know, this could be a maybe, we may not see them for sure, and I still don't let people really book for sure tarpon trips until the 1st of May.
Yeah, I mean, well, you do it right. You go out and you're going to try the tarpon, you're going to find some other fish out there that you can have fun with and make it an enjoyable, fun day. That's what being a good captain's all about. Bad captains to me are one gets so focused on one thing, they can't deviate from that to ensure the customer a good trip.
Correct.
And like you say, you'll play with the sharks, you'll do the... have you seen any schools of black drum?
Oh, yeah.
Are they out there yet?
Yeah, they're out. There's one very, very large school about, I'd say, halfway down the west wall. I saw them in the middle of that blow.
Okay, well, when Robert gets back from Costa Rica, I'm going to be calling you and ask you, I got to go out, I got to fish those schools.
Oh, they're I don't 25 know why, to 45 pounders all day long.
My head is obsessed with this. I got to take the wife, and we're going to go out and fish these. And so I'm going to be calling you, saying, if you see
this,
I'm going to be calling everybody, because Robert's going to be back a week from today. He comes back to work. So the following day, I'm on the water. I'm spending all day. I want to find that school of redfish. So hopefully they hang in there for a week.
Yeah, they'll be there between there and the Mayaca is where they've been hanging. And it's about a half an acre of fish.
Yeah, I gotta do this. I mean, right. I am so jealous of you being out there, being able to see and work these schools of fish. Because I know you. You see that school of fish, you're going to go over and you're going to catch a few.
Yeah.
And that's got to be the most amazing thing for your customers.
Yeah, it's been really neat. You know, we pull up on them and they're like, what the heck is that? Because it's a mat of fish. It's a huge blob of color. And you're like, those are all black drum. And those are... Well, are you sure? What is a black drum? I've never seen one here. Hold this.
Yeah, you're going to see one in about 20 minutes.
Yeah, so it's
that's
been
what
good.
I say. I'm so jealous of you and your customers because I know how you are. And when you're out tarpon fishing, you're very focused. But it's been tough right now. So
yeah.
Being able to understand how to take advantage of all these other fish. And I got to tell you, folks, if you're going out with Rhett and you see that school of black drum, stop tarpon fishing. Go check it out.
Oh, yeah.
Just to see it's awe-inspiring.
It is.
But
it
to
is.
Fish it, I haven't been able to do it. The last time I did that was, oh, man, it's got to be 25 years ago.
Well, they're around, man.
And
they're,
I'm just obsessed with it.
And they stay in the bay the whole year. We see them periodically all through the spring heavy and then through summer, fall. I mean, they're just in the bay. They've been in the bay off and on for 3 years now.
Mm-hmm. And this hasn't happened. Like I say, it was 20-some years ago since the last time I saw this happening. Every year for the last few years, it's been going on, and I have not been able to get out of work long enough to do it.
Yeah,
I don't care if I got to shut the store down next Wednesday. I'm going fishing.
I'll make sure I call you and give you these exact coordinates next time I find them.
So what have you been trying on the tarpon?
We're doing threadfin herring under a bobber, free line, some mullet, live mullet, cut mullet, mackerel, just about anything, catfish. I mean,
have you been doing any of the bait busters, bombers yet?
No, we're throwing that storm tail and and then some of the bait busters, but mostly the storm tail and then that big hoagie lure.
Oh, one of your customers came in and wants me to get him some of those. So I got to find out that, is it the 10-inch hoagie that you're using?
Yep,
the clear
white.
Silver?
Yep.
Or all white?
All white.
Okay, because I got to get him some, and I just got to call Hoagie and get more of them. But he was in today asking, well, I know it's this, and Rhett's got this. And I mean, he was just so excited. He's got to get these baits. And I said, don't worry, Rhett will be in later. I'll find out from Rhett what it is.
Yeah, that in fact, when you put the order, and I'd like to get some more, too. I'm getting low. I'd like the white ones and then the silver flutter, or their silver flake.
Yeah, I'll call them tomorrow and get an order shipped down.
It's good stuff, man. We actually had a fish pick one of those up between cut bait, two pieces of cut bait. We had catfish tail and a mullet tail out. And the fish weren't showing at all, but we knew they were in the area. And I was working one of those hoagies and let it lay on the bottom. And nothing was biting. And I actually got a call on my cell phone. I'm talking to one of the captains about what he's seeing. And the next thing, something picks up my hoagies. And I'm like, what the hell? And I pull on a little bit. Drag goes out. Fish jumps in the air. It ate the hoagie.
Laying on the bottom.
Floor between two pieces of cut bait. I was standing right between the guys casting in the middle of them.
Really?
Unbelievable. We talked about it all day long. How in the hell that fish found a piece of plastic? Swear on a stack of Bibles. It was unbelievable.
Because, I mean, it's a chunk of plastic.
Yeah.
Okay. I always tell people, the tarpon is not the silver king. It's not the magnificent fish until it's on the rod.
Yes.
When it's still in the water and it's swimming around, it's an overgrown ladyfish.
It's
dumber than a bag of rocks. It's frustrating as heck, but it's just a big old dumb fish.
Yeah.
Now, it's one of the most magnificent creatures once it's on the rod, jumping through the air, shining in the sunlight, all the things we think about with tarpon.
Yeah.
But you're going to do better with them. And you're going to catch more of them when you remember it is a fish.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not the most, it's not the mythical unicorn creature that they get built up to be.
That's what I was talking about. You know, it's kind of crazy. But I've been telling people the same as you. The beaches are pretty good. Mouth of Mayaca is okay. The holes are okay. Along the east and west side bars, there's hundreds, if not thousands, of tarpon. Passes hit and miss. But I really don't. I'm going to get you to help me update my Where to Tarpon map, and we'll put some links from you on the Where to map. So, but anything else you want to talk about? Anybody you want to say hi to today? Anything?
Not really, man. We're just, I've got a day off today, which is rare. I had a cancellation, so I was able to get into town, come see you, get some tackle, which is always a nice treat, because usually it's a 4 in the morning, up out of bed, and in bed by midnight, if you're lucky, type of deal this time of year. So I'm just happy to be able to get some things done and come see you guys.
You're going to try out the live liners. And now this, I'm kind of really been pushing Rhett to try out the live liners. For that 2-3 ounces extra weight, I like the versatility of being able to set them in the rod holder with the, you know,
yeah,
a lighter
sense,
drag.
And
by the time you had the big tarpon rod and the reel and all the rest of the stuff, I'm just not sure 2-3 ounces is going to make a difference.
Yeah, you're not going to feel that.
And I think having a couple like you have of the standard reels, you know, to hold and cast, save those couple ounces. But once you get past the first couple, I'm really hoping you're going to like it. And like I say, if you don't, we'll take care of it. We'll swap them out. But I am very excited about you going back into retrying the bait runner. I shouldn't say bait runner. It's pen. We're going to say live liner.
Right.
We'll stick with the pen labels here, you know.
Sure. I'm excited to give it a try, man.
people don't realize, but Bait Runner came out in 1986.
Really?
1986 is when they did the first Bait Runner. So they're so new to most people. I know they're not new to you, but a lot of our customers, and we have in so many different brands and labels. But the only thing I don't like about one of the other major brands is they messed up their secondary drag. They're called dual drag reels. We got two drags, front drag and then a fighting drag. And the other main brand, I bet it doesn't have a half a pound of drag on the Bait Runner.
Yeah.
I don't know what they did. Last year, they were fine. This year, we started getting them in.
Fixed
we got a new shipment.
Fixed it till it was broke.
Yeah, they fixed it till it was broke. That's the best way to say it. So I've been pushing along on the pens because of the durability. It's a little heavier. It's not as nice. It's more rougher gears and stuff, but
it's a workhorse, man.
It's a workhorse. Jeez, it's got that big heavy.
That Spinfisher reel is something else. I've been using them for a couple of years now, and just after it was 2012, I tried my first one and then started loading up on them last year, and now this year, all my clients are using them. They love them.
What I like is I fish tarpon 8 to 13 pounds of drag.
Mm-hmm.
That's really about where I am when I'm tarpon fishing. And these things having 30, we're barely into the drags.
Exactly.
You're not melting these reels.
No, they are very, very tough reels. I'm impressed as hell with that reel.
All right. Tell me about your name of your website. You're going to be able to click Rhett's picture. It'll take you right to his website and all that. And the website and phone number where they can reach you.
You two can check us out on the web at www.beyondbordersoutfitters.com. And our telephone number is 941-505-8481. And you'll probably reach my wife, Joellen, on that line. She's in the office most of the time while I'm on the water, and she'll be happy to set you up on my book. And if I am booked up, then she'll find you one of our top shelf guys that we use to make sure that you get a good quality experience on the waters here.
And I know most of the captains that Rhett works with, and they're real nice guys, nice bunch of people. And I guess I know you got to get going. You've got things to do, so we're going to get this wrapped up. If somebody was going to go out, where have you seen the most concentration of, like, fun fish lately? Ladyfish, trout, jacks, whatever, redfish, snook, anything?
Tip of Cape Hayes Bar, when the tide's coming in tomorrow morning, has got a lot of small jacks and ladyfish on it. And then you got the...
Well, that's good. What would you go there? What would you use when you got there? Shrimp popping cork, shrimp freeline?
Shrimp popping cork's a great thing to start with when the light's low, and then freeline it later when the light gets higher because they may shy away from the cork in the brighter light. Other than that, man, any little salty dog jig or paddle tail jig of any kind works
little
great.
Little jigs and work them up and down quick.
Yeah, exactly. Dark color in the morning when you get there, just after daylight if you're early. And if you get there after 9 when the sun's up, throw something a little brighter, maybe a little chartreuse tail to it. And it's bluefish, mackerel, ladyfish, there's pompano on there, little jacks. I mean, it's right now there's all kinds of activity there in the morning, incoming tide.
So there you got it. If you're going out tomorrow and get up a little bit early, start heading down harbor and get out that Cape Hayes Bar, catch that tide, and you're going to have a lot of fun, a lot
fish
of fish.
On.
Fish on. All right. Well, this is, let me see, I can do this right. Okay, well, thank you for all that, Rhett. The audience just really appreciates you being here. And
pleasure. Thanks for having me.
We're going to get the producer to get our exit music going here. There it goes. Okay. And, guys, Fish and Frank, Captain Rhett Morris, and thanks for listening. We'll see you in the next Radio Fishing.